ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः
As we've observed in recent history in our lifetimes, books have been very popular. Written word on books, on paper. So sometimes devotees wonder, and I just saw even recently in the last few days somebody raising an alarm that books are all going to go away soon. There's an electronic revolution afoot, and soon there won't be any books, so don't waste your time distributing them. That was the implication. However, all the research is showing the opposite. Just as recently as last week, and I haven't had time to incorporate it into this PowerPoint presentation, people send me links to research that's going on that shows that books are holding their own. Not only that, there's an analog revolution going on right now. People are going back to paper books. Now, I'm not advocating for paper. I'm advocating for any way, any delivery system for getting the message of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada's books out into the world as much as possible. Because as I'll demonstrate in this presentation, it will change the world. However, I just would like to, in the very beginning, address various alarmist views about trends that may or may not be coming up. And these kinds of things came up in Prabhupada's time also. People said various things about the future of book distribution. Prabhupada was very quick to put down various speculations. In any case, this one's easy because there's been so much research over the last few years that books, these are even from the e-industry, they're saying that books are on the rise. And e-books are keeping about steady right now, but books are increasing at a faster pace. This was a very recent September 2016. Sales of paperback books are up. Independent bookstores are thriving again. The threat of the digital apocalypse has subsided as ebook sales have tumbled. So this is the trend. And I just thought I'd put that a little bit to rest, that understanding that, you know, we have to go digital on everything. It's not true. Books are doing fine. So, what are books anyway? May I have one? Maybe a Gita would be nice. You have a Bhagavad Gita? Well, thank you. Books are containers. Inside, they hold idea seeds. And the term broadcast, actually, is a farming term. It comes from taking seeds and spreading them far and wide, broadcasted. So books have seeds inside them also, idea seeds. And those seeds are spread through these containers. It's a beautiful way to transmit ideas throughout the world. We can go across time and geography. Books can last hundreds of years. They can cross borders that we can't cross. And it's very handy. Hold it in your hands, transportable, moves around the world, opens up, and watch out, because those seeds come out. And once they come out, they affect the world in profound ways. Why do they affect the world? When we say the world, we mean the people in the world, actually. And the reason is because, well, let's first of all, I'll ask you a question. What in our Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, what do we call the soul?
Jiva.
Jiva, yeah. And what category of energy is that jiva in?
Tattvastha.
Tattvastha. What does tattvastha mean?
Marginal.
And what does marginal mean?
On the shore.
On the shore. But in more like easy to understand language, it means he's open to suggestions. Every little jiva is open to suggestion, and he's influenceable by his environment. Whatever environment jiva gets into, he adapts to that, or he's influenced by it. Krusha prakriti stohi punkte prakriti jangunan karanam gunasangosya sarasayuri janvasu. Krishna says in the Gita, the cause of the good or bad destinations of every soul is because he's been touched by various environments which contain various modes of nature. And because of that, his future is determined. The little jiva is open to suggestion, and it depends what kind of suggestion the little jiva gets for what he'll do. So, just a couple more words about power of suggestion and the jiva. Who here has heard of Coca-Cola? Okay, I'm not going to ask who here has ever consumed Coca-Cola. But do you know what their current campaign is? Do you know what their past campaigns have been? Open a bottle of happiness. That's very current. And then in the past, Coke is it. What was before that? Coke is the real thing. It's the real thing. They propagated that. Is Coke, let me just ask you, is Coke the real thing? In the Gita, Krishna says, Nasato vidite bhavo, mabhavo vidite sita, upayona pitrishnan das tvaneos tattvadarshivi. Said those are tattvadarshi, that they can see the truth. They know the difference between that which is real and that which is unreal. And Coca-Cola is not on the list of real things. It's not the real thing. What it is actually is a concept. It's sugar water, but it's presented in such a way that one identifies with it and feels that if I drink Coca-Cola, then I'll be American, I'll be glamorous. There's imagery, there's a psychological way in which people are influenced to buy Coca-Cola. I see everywhere I go, I was in Africa, I saw Coca-Cola, and the imagery is definitely Anglo-centered and very much indicates that by drinking Coca-Cola, your life will be better. But will it?
No.
After all, the sugar water. And, you know, when you do buy the Coca-Cola, bring it home, every soul in your body is saying, don't put that in here. And little jiva's going, no, I saw it on the sign. It's there. I'll be happy. It's the real thing. So jiva really gets faked out by the environment. Looks around, he sees things, and the ideas go in the mind because he's open to suggestion. How open? Very open to suggestion. Jivas can be influenced within a second. They can think one thing and someone give them a suggestion, they'll change their mind right away. So here are ways in which these idea seeds have been delivered over time. And human beings go to great extent to deliver idea seeds to the world because it actually has a profound effect. Here we see, on the left-hand side, some original writing on palm leaves. The palm leaf literatures are still around India. They're disappearing very quickly. Mukunda Datta, the great pundit in ISKCON, specializes in this. He studied as a part of his academic career. He was telling me that tens of thousands of original scriptures are lost every year in India because they just disintegrate, where they're left in bad conditions that go away. In any case, to create one of those, you need a stylus. It's a little metal implement, and you take a palm leaf, and you have to press upon it with the stylus and make the letters. And then afterwards, you have to take each one of the palm leaves and put it in the sun. And after it's exposed to the sun, you get that darkened image of the letters. Imagine writing a whole Bhagavad Gita like that. In fact, there were scribes that did that for a living. Most of them, I've come to understand, were illiterate. They simply knew how to make the letters, and they would look at one page, and then they would copy it onto the other, and that was the painstaking way in which books were produced. But they were produced nonetheless, because people want to read them, because living entities also have this chit-shakti. They want knowledge. And if you look around the world anywhere, just walk up and down the street about 10 a.m. in the morning on a Sunday when people are just waking up, and you'll see they're coming outside to pick up a newspaper off the front porch. They'll walk in a half stupor from the night before, and just waking up but reading the newspaper. If you get on a train and you walk up and down, you'll see people have their noses buried in some screen or in a book. And they're trying to take in information. Little jiva likes to drink in information because we have that chit potency that comes from Krishna. So here's a more modernized version of handwritten scriptures. This is a movable type, a way in which you could mass produce literature. And actually, the first printing press, in historians say, was by what's his name?
Gutenberg.
Yeah, Gutenberg. The Gutenberg press, and he wanted to mass produce the Bible and make sure it was available to the world. So it was known as the Gutenberg press, and he was able to mass produce Bibles. Of course, mass produce at that time meant he could do about 16 or 20 at a time, which was a big improvement over writing one at a time by hand. And then, of course, there are other Bible societies. The Royal Bible Society then made better technology, and they started putting out hundreds and then thousands of Bibles and getting them out all over the world, which actually had a profound effect on the rise of Christianity. So, what about books? They transform the world. They have a profound effect on trends, on ideologies, and how they get embedded in society. So, of course, the Holy Bible, I just gave an example of that. It's famous all over the world. In fact, nowadays, there are groups like the Gideons who put out hundreds of millions of Bibles all over the world. That's what they do. They make sure that the Bible goes out into every nook and cranny of the world in all the different languages they could possibly translate it into. And it has an effect. How about this? Let's do a survey in this room here. How many of you have heard of the theory of evolution? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay. How many of you have a copy of The Origin of the Species? Is it in the car, out in the car?
Soft copy.
Two people have it out of all those. How many have read it before in your lifetime? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Okay. Academic setting? Or a little light reading on the side? Do you have a copy now? It's not out in the car? Not on your nightstand at home? If you interview thousands of people, millions of people around the world, they'll all say they've heard of evolution. Many of them will say they believe in evolution. But if you ask them if they've ever read Origin of the Species, they'll say, no, I never, most of them never even heard of it. But where did the theory of evolution come from? It came from this book. That book went out into society. Some people read it. The ideology, the seeds spilled out. They implanted themselves in people's minds and hearts. And this idea, this ideology grew. And it's still growing all over the world, because of the distribution of this particular book. When someone takes the trouble to compile ideas and put it in one of these containers and then make sure it gets out to people, it definitely has an effect. Let's look at some more examples. There are various economic systems in the world that people accept as practically their religion. There are ways in which people fight wars over the kind of economic system they have in their particular country. And these all come from various writings. This is a famous book which was a beginning point for some of the modern systems of economics that we have in the world today. Apparently it's not just my voice, it's also my brain not working properly. Bear with me. And here's one, you may be familiar, Fidel Castro recently passed away. Very successful revolutionary, took over the whole area of Cuba. Anybody from Cuba here? So, how did he do that? He used the written word. According to PBS Broadcasting, they did a special on Fidel Castro. He was in jail. He tried a small-scale revolution when he was just a little revolutionary. And he was arrested and put in jail. And while he was in jail, he started writing down his thoughts. But how did he write them? In lime juice.
because lime juice is invisible until you expose it to the sun. And his fiance at that time, Mitra, used to come there and visit him, and she would smuggle those apparently blank pages out of the prison. She had reconstituted, reassembled, put into books. And by the time Fidel Castro came out of the prison, the atmosphere was surcharged with revolution. And according to the PBS researchers, that was the catalyst that caused the revolution that allowed Castro to come into power and present his ideology, or make his, allow his ideology to prevail. Here's one closer to home. Where are we right now?
Durham.
Where?
Durham.
Where's Durham? What country? How did the United States come about? By what means did the United States, how did it evolve?
A revolution.
A revolution, yes. So revolutions just don't start spontaneously. There has to be some organization behind it. And what kind of organization? You have to have a written document that explains why people should revolt. So here's the document. According to historians, this document called Common Sense, written by Thomas Paine, remains per capita the largest selling book in the history of the world. He sold it to practically every person in the colonies at that time. And because of this book, people were galvanized to foment revolution. And that was the cause, according to historians, of the American Revolution. It was the written word that emboldened people to step up and fight for their freedom. A little light reading for you if you want to read that, but, or you can just enjoy the effects of the revolution by being in this free country. But here's where it started, everybody, from a book, the written word. It's very powerful. So, we're in a sampradaya. Sampradaya actually means a bequeathment. Bequeathment means to give a gift, to pass down a gift, an invaluable gift to somebody else. And in our line, and our family business, which is passing on that gift, we continue the sampradaya by passing on the most valuable of all gifts, which is the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. These are passed down to us through the parampara, through the sampradaya. So it's one great soul to another passing it down. Incidentally, we find that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very fond of books himself. This is kind of a miracle that we have the books that we do have, if you just stop to think about it. It's easy to take things for granted and just think, yes, we have the Bhagavad Gita. Yes, I know Bhagavad Gita. I know everything. Or one can think, Srimad Bhagavatam is just available from the BBT. You can just get it as many sets as you want. Or you might think, Brahma Samhita. Yeah, I have a copy of the Brahma Samhita somewhere. It's in the trunk of my car. Well, where did it come from? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discovered it, according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Adi Keshava temple when he was touring South India as a sannyasi monk, barefoot, walking town to town. He went into the temple, he found that manuscript, and he borrowed it and had it copied. Many times he had it copied by hand. He took those copies with him, and he distributed them to all his favorite disciples. That got passed down through our sampradaya. It's one of the bequeathments that we've received. And Prabhupada says much about it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that it contains the entire philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism within that one Sanghita, the Brahma Sanghita. So that's a great gift that's been passed down to us from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He also, in his travels, found the Krishna Karnamrita and passed them down. And as we know very well, he was fully absorbed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which he said was the supreme authority on everything. So, I want you to look at this picture, which is also the picture on the cover of the Sri Brahma Samhita. And who do you see up there? Krishna. Who else?
Brahma.
Do you notice anything anachronistic about this picture? Yes, there's a book. And this looks like the beginning of creation, right? Because we know this is Krishna playing his flute, Brahma hearing it through his, how many ear holes?
Eight.
Okay. That will be on the test. There you go. 9 ear holes. Described in the Brahma Samhita. Uvacha purutas tasmai tasya divya saraswati. Kama Krishnaya Govinda He Gopijane Ityapi Balabhaya Priyavani Mantam Tetasati Priyam Tapastam Tapaetena Tapasidhir Bhavishyati. Describing this particular scene, that this flute song of Krishna is entering to the eight ear holes of Brahma. And now, where do you get the book? From Amazon? Now, it's Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, who wrote the foreword to my book, Our Family Business, explains that we are known as the Sampradaya of the book. Are you aware of that? That's why symbolically Brahma starts off with a book in his hand, because it represents our business, which is to pass on this gift to others. And that's what Brahma did for his sons. His sons passed it on to others. We have the old Visibhuk session, which let's take a look at a sample of our Visibhuk session. Who's that? Now, I need a little help on this, because you can say book or books. Say book.
Book.
And books.
Books.
Okay, now say it kind of loud.
Books.
It's easy to say, right? If you want to say it really loud, it has, you can aspirate that. Books.
Books.
That's not really loud. Try it really loud. Books.
Books.
Okay. We can use either books or books. Okay, so who is this? What's he writing?
Books.
That is correct. Who's this? What is he holding in his hand?
Books.
That's right. You see one of those palm leaf scrolls? That's what he's holding in his hand. It's a book. Okay, who is that?
Rupa Goswami.
And now, what is he writing?
Books.
That's right. He's kneeling down writing books. Who is this? He's depicted here sitting under a tree. And by the way, just incidentally, what's he writing? That is correct. Who are they? And what are they holding in their hands? That is correct. Who is this? By the way, what's he posing with?
Books.
Yeah, those are his books that he wrote, over 100 books. Who is this? What's he posing with in the background there? Correct. And who is this? Oh, I just noticed something about this picture. And what's he posing with? Do we notice a pattern here? Yes, there's a definite pattern. We are the Sampradaya of the book. Because this is the bequeathment. This is the Sampradaya. This is the form of gift-giving that we engage in, that the Acharyas engage in. They don't give away free cars, like Oprah did once on her show. They give away the most valuable of information of how one can develop love for God and go back to Godhead. This is the greatest gift. And it comes in these containers. And these containers go out into the world. And when people open them, the idea seeds spread out. And they embed themselves in the world. Before Prabhupada's advocacy of distributing books is not some sentimental idea. It's actually practical. It's actually the means by which one changes the world, by mass distribution of literature. When it gets out into society, when people read it in various places, then those ideologies take hold, and also people have access to knowledge through which they can start their own practice of Krishna consciousness. They can build communities and so forth. You also note that despots often go for the books. First thing they do is try to restrict people's access to books. We went to Vietnam a few years ago. I went to Vietnam a few years ago with a few representatives of the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust in order to increase the publication of books in Vietnam. It's not so easy as it is here in America. As soon as we got off the plane, we were informed that we were being watched, so we had to be really careful. And we had to go to special government authorized printers, present our manuscript for the Bhagavad Gita, and it had to go through government censors and get a special stamp of approval by the government to make sure that it was not subversive in any way. And they keep a tight watch on the books because people know when living entities read and they get the ideas in their minds, they can get together. They can have a little meeting and say, hey, let's rally around this point. It happens in countries all over the world. People have private meetings. They start reading books. In fact, in Russia, there's a way in which the main leader in Russia right now, who was there at the time, describes how it is that Christian consciousness spread so quickly all over Russia. And that was that after so many years of being restricted, there was a time at which perestroika, Gorbachev, started loosening things up to the world, and a huge shipment of Prabhupada's books made it into Russia, translated. Before that, you know, the devotees tried to smuggle books in. They did successfully. And there were all kinds of ways they tried to do that. There were ships and barges that would go under certain bridges that were headed for Russia at the time, Soviet Union. And they would try to drop these bundles off onto the boats that were headed in there so no one would know, but it would somehow or other end up in there. There are devotees that risk their freedom by putting books inside the engine blocks of cars. They wrap them in aluminum foil, put them very carefully, hide them in the car. Oftentimes, these cars got searched. I mean, they were always searched at the border, but oftentimes they wouldn't find them. The few books that made it into the former Soviet Union were devoured by the people there. They were so starved for transcendental knowledge. They would read one book, they would copy it by hand and pass it on to others. And some of the books that the devotees found later had been passed around so many times. Each person who got it put a little check mark in it, and there were hundreds, sometimes thousands of little check marks that people would pass these things around. And then when the restrictions lifted, the devotees attempted to bring in 400,000 books in his truck, and it got to the border and it was held up because the word hadn't gone out about the new regulations to everybody. Even at the borders, they didn't know. So they were holding those books at the border, and the devotees at that time went and had big demonstrations, and in front of the state building, they had signs saying, "We don't want vodka, we want our books." They went out into the on television and everywhere. They made a big demand, and gradually it got up to the higher levels, and finally they released the books. And the leaders of the Russian Yatra say that was the beginning of the expansion of Christian consciousness all over Russia. The books came in on that truck, and they started going out. And at that time, people were so starved that they would spend their an entire year's credit. The people working in mines, for instance, they worked on credit because they were so poor at the time. The country was so poor they couldn't even pay people. They had credits they could trade in for food and all kinds of other goods. They would trade in a year's worth of those things to buy a set of Prabhupada's books. They were so starved for knowledge and information. So this is the power of the written word. And we see, like, the beginnings of the Christian conscious movement. This is the opening of the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan, 1975. And here's devotees from all over the world suddenly showing up in the Holy Dham. And how did they get there? By Prabhupada's pen. These books infiltrated the various places around the world. People read them. They became convinced. And they came there to worship Shri Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan. And from there, that those openings of the Vrindavan temple, Mayapur temple, now spread all over the world. Hundreds of temples, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of devotees. And they're being sustained by Srila Prabhupada's pen and these books that are coming out. So, Prabhupada writes again and again about the importance of the book. You'll find in the new edition of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. It was just released. Do you know that? So it came from the BBT many years ago, but it was a little unwieldy because each book came out individually Each book was extremely large and very expensive, $45 per book. Some people have the first volume and the third volume and not the second, and all mixed up. So they just released all three volumes at once. It's only $46 for the whole set. But that was just product placement, by the way. But in that book, you'll find a foreword by Joseph T. O'Connell, PhD. He passed away a few years ago, the preeminent scholar of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in the academic world, renowned all over the world. And he wrote about how Gopi Pranadana's production of the, and Jayavita Swami and Keshav Bharati Maharaj's production of this Priyat Bhagavatamrita is unprecedented. It had been translated, just the verses, previously, but the purports were so difficult to translate. But Gopi Pranadana was so qualified, having, first of all, he was a genius in linguistics, and second of all, he was a pure devotee, and third of all, a great follower of Srila Prabhupada, and fourth of all, he was trained by Prabhupada, and within the context of the BBT to do the work that he did. So it was some kind of miracle. So I just bring that up to acquaint you with Joseph T. O'Connell. He writes in another paper called Institutionalizing Prema. It's an essay about how it is that we pass on this idea of spontaneous love for Lord Chaitanya, as taught by Lord Chaitanya, spontaneous love for Radha and Krishna to the world. So he talks about institutions. Have you ever heard the word institution?
Yes.
Have you ever heard it, people talk about, oh, those institutions, or people sometimes say, I don't like organized religion. Have you ever heard that one? And even Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur talked about institutions. He said, as soon as you institutionalize the process of devotional service, you kill it. But then, of course, he institutionalized it more than anybody. Because it's necessary. It has to be there in order to make it available to the masses of people all over the world. But I found in that context that Joseph T. O'Connell wrote something very interesting in his book, or in his essay, Institutionalizing Prema. And that is that in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, there's the hard institution and the soft institution. And he said the soft institution, first of all, he defines the institution as the means by which you transport culture across time and geography. How you transport culture across time and geography. In other words, how do you encapsulate all of the activities that we do, all the things that we consider right, all the things that we consider to be valuable, and transport that to other cultures? And over long periods of time, how does it happen? After all, we're trying to spread a mission, aren't we? He said, the soft institution in Gaudiya Vaishnavism is the book. And he said, it's foundational to the spread of Krishna consciousness all over the world, this soft institution. And Prabhupada gave such indications as well, which I mentioned in this book, Our Family Business. And that is that our movement is founded upon these literatures. Without the literatures, we have no credibility at all, practically. But as it is, we have the ways and means of starting up movements everywhere by distributing books. People in their own homes can read these books, follow them, get devotee association, understand how to practically carry out the instructions and so forth. And they can flourish in devotional service. Now, part of the way Prabhupada ingeniously incorporated the book into the overall institution of ISKCON was, as he wrote, I have hatched this transcendental plot that by selling books, we would not only spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, but at the same time, we would realize a profit that would be used to establish centers for Krishna consciousness all over the world. So Prabhupada started this system of printing books, and there's a markup on the books from the BBT. And that markup is specifically used for printing, 50% for printing more books, and 50% goes to building ISKCON temples. Did you know that most of the temples around the world, the early temples, were all built with BBT money? Prabhupada gave loans and grants all over the world. He also gave loans and grants to many of the programs, like the Bhaktivedanta Institute, there's the Fate Museums, there's a long list of projects that he started with the through the BBT. And one of the projects now that receives millions of dollars from the BBT, that is, every time you sell a book, part of the profit goes into the TLVP. It's being built in Mayapur, as was the desire of Prabhupada. So he, as he says, hatched this transcendental plot to transport culture across time and geography through the book, and at the same time make a profit so that ISKCON could grow in all its programs and temples could be established all over the world. So these books are access to higher association. If you sit down with the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, you can have Srila Prabhupada's association by hearing and relishing what he wrote. As with most authors, it's very difficult to get a personal audience. Even was difficult to get a personal audience with Prabhupada when he was present, especially after 1970, things started to really pick up. It was very difficult to just go and sit in the same room. But even more intimate association comes if you sit down with an author's book. You can read it again and again, and you can get the most confidential thoughts that the author has placed there to put out into public. And you can hear what are the inner workings of that author's mind. So it's a very privileged kind of access that we have in the revealed scriptures. We can hear what Rupa Goswami is thinking, what the conversations were between various great sages like Maharaj Nimi and the Navayogendras. All these things are available. You get higher association. And this is extremely valuable for us and for the people of the world to have access to this kind of association through transcendental literature. So it's important to read the books very carefully. This has become major a point of concern in our movement. At the recent ILS, the last ILS that was in Mayapur, which is the ISKCON Leadership Sangha, the leaders come from all over the world to share their insights at Mayapur. Has anybody been to one of those? Yeah, so they set up access to people who come and speak who are doing nice things around the world to spread Krishna consciousness. There was, in one of the plenary sessions, a survey conducted about how much leaders were reading, and there were abysmal results. Some of the leaders had read the Bhagavad Gita maybe once in the last 16 years, and this is something that has been on the forefront of GBC's agenda. Many other people and communities are concerned. How much are we reading the books? So one thing that I've discovered is that if you regulate your reading and you do it every day systematically, then you'll notice a marked increase in your own Krishna consciousness. So to that end, in the last couple of years, we created an app. It's called Be a Sage, Page by Page. Anybody have it? Can you show it to us? So you go in, if you go to the App Store on your smartphone, if you don't have a smartphone, see me afterwards. See if we get you a deal. There it is. Aditya Narayan Prabhu, could you hold that up? It's available for Android and for Apple. And it's a little app. And on the app, it has a picker wheel. You can pick which one of Srila Prabhupada's books you want to read. And then you can spin the wheel, and it will show you next the periods of time. And you can pick a period of time, for instance, for the Srimad Bhagavatam. Let's ask you this question. What is your name?
Shalki.
Shalki, when are you going to finish the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, all 12 cantos? What date? She doesn't know. Okay, that's okay. It's okay not to know. I'll bet most people in this room don't know when they're going to finish. Okay, let's just say, hypothetically, that you'd like to finish it in a given amount of time. from this date. So that if we wake you up at 1 o'clock in the morning, tomorrow morning, and we ask you, Shalki, when are you going to finish the Bhagavatam? You'll be able to tell us an exact date. So, how many months, years would you like to take to read the 12 canons of the Bhagavatam? 5 years, okay? Put it on the wheel. Let the record show that Shalki wants to read the Bhagavatam over the next 5 years. And now, how many pages will she have to read?
To complete reading the Bhagavatam in 5 years, please read 9 pages per day.
9 pages per day. And also, there's a little toggle switch at the bottom. If you switch that over, it'll tell you how many shlokas you have to read. Because if you're reading electronically, then you can't count the pages. It's hard to do that. You'll want to have count how many shlokas. How many shlokas would she have?
8 shlokas.
8 shlokas a day. Does that sound doable? Okay. So what if you started today? What date would you finish the Bhagavatam? 31st. What is it? 2023. No? 2022. On 31st of May, 2022. What time of the day would you finish? Noon? 10 p.m. 11:59 p.m. Okay. 10 p.m. She'll finish. But 2022, May 31st, so we'll wake you up at 1 o'clock in the morning and say, Shalki! When are you going to finish the Bhagavatam? 2022, May 31st, at 10 p.m. Right? Give her a hand. Is that possible? Finish 5 years? Absolutely. 9 pages a day is doable. It's something we can integrate into your schedule. And you'll find that if you do that, then you suddenly will have a clarity that you didn't have before. It's easier to make decisions. You'll feel yourself thinking about Krishna. You'll see the world in relationship to Krishna. Your problems will be less severe because you'll have the sense of detachment. And just from reading the Srimad Bhagavatam in 9 pages a day. And then if you decided you want to read less, you could do that. You could read it in a longer period of time. Or if you decided that enough's enough, I'm going to step up, I'm going to finish it in 1 year, what would you do then? Well, everyone knows 41 pages. So 41 pages a day. You finish in 1 year, and how do you think you feel about yourself? You finish the Bhagavatam in 1 year. And the atmosphere around you, what do you think your family would feel? Seeing you read 41 pages or 9 pages or any pages regularly every day. If the atmosphere of your whole family would change because you're there every day pulling out the Bhagavatam. So this is a highly recommended program. In fact, Prabhupada advocated over and over again, please read my books. I met Prabhupada in 1973 in San Francisco. I was part of the Sankirtan party there. And our temple president introduced us to Srila Prabhupada and told him our book scores. Because everybody knew Prabhupada was interested in book scores. But that day, Prabhupada looked at us. He didn't say anything about the book scores. He said, you must also read my books. He said, I have not written these books just for selling. I have written them for you to read, become pure devotees, and go back to Godhead. He said, I wrote them for you. So this is a very important point for our Krishna conscious movement, that we have to imbibe. The word imbibe means to drink, by the way. You have to drink through your ears what's in these books, and then you can become more valuable to the entire Krishna conscious society. You can be more effective in helping other people become Krishna conscious. Everything works by transcendental mantra. And the transcendental mantras that you want to hear are in these books. It's also a perfect gift for people in the world. So we also advocate going out to distribute books. We went out yesterday. Was it yesterday we went out?
Yes.
Yeah, as recently as yesterday. We went out to distribute books. And I can tell you that it is just the most wonderful experience, going out into the world and meeting people. And I'll just give you a few incidents from yesterday that we experienced. So how did we do it? Well, we just gathered ourselves. We put together some little bags full of books. We decided where we were going to go. And then we drove out there. We also took with us, we had prasadam. What kind of prasadam? Lollipops. Because there's not one person on the planet that doesn't like lollipops. If they don't, we don't want to know. No, that's not true. But everyone likes lollipops. Every person I've ever met likes a lollipop. See? Said the word lollipop. He wants to know where is his lollipop. And we took some cards that have the Maha Mantra on them. And we just went out and met people and offered them the opportunity to read Christian literature. And Prabhupada writes in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that this is the main purpose of the Christian Conscious Societies, to offer literatures to people all over the world. And he said that those who go out and do it are engaged in practical samadhi. So, when we got out of our car, I saw a couple of people getting into their car. So I went over and I started talking to them. And I showed them the Bhagavad Gita. It was a husband and wife. And they took a Bhagavad Gita. So we were emboldened. So we went a little further. We went into a shop. And inside the shop, it was a little strip mall. It was a taqueria. Is that how you say it? They make tacos or something. And what is it? Taqueria. What are they making there? Quesadilla? Okay, so they make like Mexican food, right? And so the people at the counter didn't speak English. And we speak a little Spanish, but they called the owner of the store. They let him deal with this. So he came up and we showed him Bhagavad Gita, and he pretty much gave us his full attention. He started looking through the Bhagavad Gita. I explained the whole thing to him and told him, actually, here's what I told him. I told him it's a book on yoga, meditation, that shows you how to get free from stress. And I asked him, you've heard of stress before, right? He goes, of course. And I said, really, because you don't look stressed. You look very peaceful. In fact, your eyes look spiritual. I said, what's your secret? And he said, oh, I don't know. You know, he said, you must just come from a good family. He said, yeah. And I went out and I showed him the Bhagavad Gita. I explained it to him that it's been read by Thoreau, Emerson, Gandhi, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Albert Einstein, the Beatles, Tupac Shakur. And then I went through and I showed him the Sanskrit, asked him if he could read that. And he said he couldn't. I said, I was just testing him. But actually, it was translated in English. And I said, it's been translated in English many, many times. But out of all the translations, and then I turned to the very front of the book, I said, this has become very popular academically. And I showed him Georgetown University, and I showed him USC, University of Southern California. And I said, here it is in a nutshell. And I opened up to the picture of changing bodies. And I said, look, we start here, and I pointed to the baby's body, and I said, we end up here and showed the skeleton of the man who just left his body. I said, we're all just passing through. And I said, where are you in all this? And he pointed out a place on the continuum of bodies. And I said, wow, that's amazing. I was there a few minutes ago, and now I'm over here. Life goes by very quickly. Then I showed him the next page, and I said, this shows a self-realized person. A self-realized person treats everyone with respect because he or she sees that God's in everyone's heart. He liked that. Then I said, you've heard of karma before, right? And he said, yeah. I said, what does it mean to you? And he said, you know, if you do good things or bad things, it comes back to you. And we really appreciated him for that, knowing karma. And then I asked him, is this your main profession? He said, yes. And then I showed him a picture of the yogi, the soul personally on the body. I said, yeah, he used to run a taqueria also. You know? And then I said, we don't sell these books like in a bookstore. I said, we ask for a donation. I said, we don't need the money. The only reason we ask is when you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it connects you to the previous teachers who have passed it down over many generations and allows you to enter deeply within the knowledge. And as he was considering it, I said, so where are you from? He said, Venezuela. I said, you know Elon Chester? You know who Elon Chester is? Javi? Habib Prabhu is a devotee. He lives in Florida. He's a disciple of Prabhupada. He's a very famous musician, especially in Venezuela. He won a Grammy award for his music. He's brilliant and a great devotee. And so everybody in Venezuela, it's like asking somebody in America, have you heard of Elvis Presley? And he goes, yeah, of course I've heard of Elon Chester. He said, he's one of my best friends. And he goes, come on. I said, you're cool to show him a picture. So just so happened I was just in Japan with Habib Prabhu. We did a tour around Japan together. So she showed him a picture. There we are sitting together. He goes, oh, be darned. So he gave a donation. He took the Bhagavad Gita. And it was a very sweet exchange. And it just running an ordinary taqueria and sort of a like nondescript little mall there somewhere. But that made a change in the universe. Because basically, this universe is a closed system. It has the same kind of information inside all the time. It's just recycled in different ways. That's why it's kind of boring here. But this information that we're distributing comes from outside the system. And that's described by Narada Muni. He says, Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo yasmin prati shlokam abhadyabhakti namanyana tasya shankitani at srinvanti gayanti granati sadhava. He says that this Srimad Bhagavatam is a different creation. It doesn't come from this world. It's not part of the closed system. It's information that comes from the spiritual world. And when it enters into this realm, it transforms anyone that it touches. It creates a revolution in the unbiased lives of the world's misdirected civilization. It changes people's hearts. It's all-powerful. It's non-different from Krishna. And now in that taqueria somewhere, or in that very sweet man's home, there now sits a shining copy of the Bhagavad Gita as it is. The bequeathment that came all the way down from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a gift that's been passed down from the greatest of acharyas. Not only that, he got the great opportunity to give a donation to help propagate Krishna consciousness all over the world. That's a permanent benefit, permanent asset that he'll have life after life, that he gave something for the Krishna consciousness movement. And that brings up a good point. I'm glad I brought it up. Thank you. Oftentimes people wonder about book distribution. Say, well, you know, this book distribution, okay, yeah, but what about the donation part? That's the sticking point. Because people think, yeah, I can go give out free books. Anybody can give out free books. But when you say we're going out to sell books, people say, I think my mom's calling me. I gotta make her a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I gotta go home. So, what is it about the donation? It's exhilarating, spiritually exhilarating. Why? Because we've been asked to present this philosophy to people in such a way that they can accommodate it. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, don't give this knowledge to people who are not devoted or austere. Why does he say that? It's because if you're not devoted or austere, you cannot accommodate this information. It has to be made in a way that they can easily take it in, and they have to have some appreciation for it and a devotion for it, or they have to have performed some austerity in order to accommodate it. So now, how does the donation apply to that concept? Well, we know when we ask people for a donation, it's a little bit of an austerity for them. How do we know that? By the look on their face. By their body language, by their hesitation, by so many other means we can intuit that it's a little bit austere. You ask anybody, oh, by the way, can I have $5? And they're like, why do you want $5? I want $5. It's not so easy to hand over money, because money is what people work for very hard. They exchange their life for it. So when someone is offered the opportunity to hand over a donation, it actually opens a channel for them, so that they can appreciate the book. And that's exactly what I tell them when I give them the book and I ask them for donation. And if you tell people exactly what's happening, you'll feel no anxiety in asking for donation. Again, we don't sell these like in a bookstore. We only take a donation. We don't need the money. The only reason we ask is, when you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it connects you to the previous teachers who have passed it down over many generations and allows you to enter deeply within the knowledge. It's a penance. You perform this penance and you'll be able to understand the book. I say that to people. It's penance. And, you know, we met, according to those who were keeping track yesterday, we met 30 people yesterday. And out of those 30 people, 29 people took a book. Out of those 29 people, 28 people paid for the book. And the reason is because we're just absolutely straightforward with them. We made friends with them, we showed them the book, and we told them exactly what the money's for. When you tell people exactly what the money's for, it's for you, it's not for me. I don't need your money, I don't even want your money. The only reason I'm asking, I'm here as a representative for these previous teachers, and if you give, you'll be able to understand this book. It's very simple. People appreciate that, and they take the book. Thank you. Now, can we beg from beggars? Is it moral? Is it ethical to beg from a beggar? Why? Because they get spiritual benefit?
Because we are all beggars.
You're all beggars? These are good answers. I'll tell you a story. We did this last year. Every year we do, Krishna willing, we do a yatra in Jagannath Puri and Mayapur. About 100 devotees, like 85, 90 devotees go on yatra together. So every year we always distribute a little prasadam and books wherever we go, here and there. But this last year we decided ahead of time that this is going to be a Sankirtan yatra. Because we didn't want people who weren't coming on vacation to just hang out in the holy dham and look around a little bit. We wanted devotees sort of coming there to do a little yajna and feel part of the dham. So we said, this is a Sankirtan yatra. So we flew in thousands of books. We flew in thousands of lollipops, thousands of little mantra cards. And we set up shop there in Jagannath Puri. We're there for about 8 days in Jagannath Puri. Chinese devotees came. About 25 Chinese and Japanese devotees came with us on this tour. Didn't speak a word of English. They definitely didn't speak a word of Korean. So we all went out together to the holy places, and along with our little tour of the holy places, we had Harinam. We carried a little deity of Mahaprabhu with us wherever we went. We saturated the place with lollipops. There wasn't one person standing anywhere that didn't have a lollipop in their mouth. Offered to Radha Krishna. And we distributed books like anything. So in the beginning, the Chinese devotees, I saw them, they were just giving away free books. And the next day we gathered together, I said, no, you don't understand. You're cheating these people. You give away a free book, they don't appreciate it as much. You have to learn to ask for a donation. And I explained to them just what I told you about how you tell them it's for them, it's not for me. And he asked for donation. He said that they're able to accommodate and appreciate the book. So the next day they went out a little bit timidly, but they began to distribute. And the way we did it was that we had a little card that explained in Korean and Bengali and Hindi what we were doing and that we were asking for donation. So then I saw the most amazing thing. These Chinese devotees, Japanese devotees, going up and down, meeting Koreans. And the Koreans were surprised to see devotees, Vaishnavas from China and Japan, approaching them in the holy place, offering them a book about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Jagannath. They were actually charmed and stunned at the same time. And then these devotees began to feel this ecstasy, and they realized the value of engaging in this exchange. It's a loving exchange. We give, we invite them to give something in return to show their appreciation for it. And the Chinese devotees at the end, they didn't want to stop distributing books, and they also told us it's so hard to distribute books in China. But they saw here, they gained confidence because they realized the absolute value of the books through these people in the Dham who love them so much. You know, if you go on the street corner in Chicago or New York or something, you distribute a bunch of books, people take them along, they'll put them to the side, and maybe they'll read them later. But in Jagannath Puri, when people buy a book, they read it immediately. And if we distribute books down the street, if you walk behind, you'll see every person in stalls, every people sitting, stop their rickshaw, They're sitting there with three people reading the book together, up and down. It's a very satisfying scene. And as usual, when you go out to distribute books, Krishna gives you information of how to do it. It's a transcendental activity inspired by the Lord from the heart. The prophet said this personally. In 1975, our Sankirtan party, it was called the BBT party, we were charged with traveling around and teaching devotees how to distribute books. So we wanted to know from Prabhupada directly, how should we do this? How should we train devotees? So he said, teach them to be sincere. Because if they're sincere and they just try, and then he pointed with his hand, he said, then the Lord, the master within their heart, will inform them how to do it. He said, every devotee has their own genius. It comes from Krishna, how to do this. So one thing, we were inspired by Krishna. I was observing in Orissa, how when people make any spiritual exchange, they take their shoes off. You know this? South India, I've noticed it too, door to door, sometimes South Indians will take, before I hand them the book, they'll take their shoes off. So in Orissa, everybody does that. So we found out the key to distributing books. It took about a day and a half, and then I realized this is an infallible way for anybody to take a book in Orissa. You walk up, throw your shoes off, and immediately, whoever you're talking to, they go, they throw their shoes off. Your kids throw their shoes off. The wife throws her shoes off. Everyone's like, all right, this is it. You hand over the book, and just give a little card, said, please give a donation, and they immediately give something. In 8 days, we collected 1 lakh rupees. And we distributed 5,000 books in 8 days with 80 devotees just walking around, plus 5,000 lollipops, which is really a nice thing to see in a real concentrated area. Tons of prasadam, tons of books. This is real satisfaction. And while we had, every day we'd also do a huge harinam in front of the Jagannath temple. So while we were having that harinam, we'd also distribute books from a table. So there are a lot of beggars there in Jagannath Puri, professionals. So one of them came up to me while I was distributing books to other people, asking other people for donations. And she kept asking me to give something. So I gave her a book. And then I asked her to give something. And why did I ask her? Because she's as conditioned as anybody else. And she could benefit as much as anybody else by giving something to Krishna. Because we go as Krishna's representatives to accept on behalf of Krishna, to give it to Krishna, to employ it in Krishna's service. So now this became a great scene of interest to the local people. Begging from a beggar. A crowd started to form around us. I said, you give a donation. And she said, no. And I said, no, you give. And she said, no. And more people came around. A big crowd came around. And I said, you give. And then finally, a big smile came on her face. She grabbed in her bag and gave a donation. And the whole crowd went, hey! If I was asking on behalf of my own self, it would be immoral. Unethical, but I wasn't. I was asking on behalf of Srila Prabhupada and the disciplined succession. Give something back. And she felt it. The crowd felt it. Everybody knew it. And that's what this is. It's a transcendental exchange of love that connects people to the parampara. It's a conscious exchange. We're giving the greatest gifts to people by going out and meeting them, just giving association, being their friend. They're sitting in taquerias all over the world, just suffering. They're in little cramped apartments. It's amazing how many people live in these cramped apartments. And Prabhupada wrote before he came to America in a poem called Vrindavani Bhajan. He said, what are people doing in their homes? He said, they're sitting in there, and they're looking out the window, and they're wondering, when are Nitai and Gaur going to come and save me? So if you want to know what people are doing in their houses when you're going door to door, that's what they're doing. They're waiting for Nitai and Gaur to come and save them. And you could be that representative who goes there and helps to connect them to the Supreme Personality. now we'll take a couple of reflections. That is anything you heard so far that's stuck in your mind. Yes?
I was just concerned about the asking donations, because I feel suddenly so much restriction, especially among Indians. When you ask some donations, they just simply just back out.
Indians?
Yeah.
No, see, with everybody, you have to know the key. You can't hand Indians a Bhagavad Gita and say, give a donation, because they'll feel insulted. Because they know Bhagavad Gita. They know everything. We met an Indian man the other day. He came out in his bathrobe. We were going door to door, and he came out and he closed the door. He was standing in front of the front door, but I guess his family's in there. Kept a little cracking standing. What do you want? He said, yeah, this is the Bhagavad Gita. We're showing this Bhagavad Gita. He said, I know everything. Yeah. I called the other door and said, get over here. You got to meet this guy. He knows everything. To understand, they do know everything. They're from Bhart Bhasha. So you don't insult them by trying to condescend and teach them Bhagavad Gita. And they'll immediately reject it. So when I approach Indians, I never give them anything. I just stand there. If it's door to door, I stand in the doorway and I just start telling them what we're doing. I said, look at you. You already know Bhagavad Gita. Your mom knows Bhagavad Gita. Your grandmother memorized Bhagavad Gita. That's what they were about to tell me. And then I say, what we're doing, we're following in your footsteps. We're teaching the Bhagavad Gita to people who don't know about it. We're going to prisons, we're going to hospitals, we're going to schools, and we're setting up centers everywhere to teach Bhagavad Gita. Not only that, we're putting tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands now of Bhagavad Gitas in motels and hotels. We're distributing to people all over the world in many different languages, in Chinese, in Japanese, in Farsi. Muslims are taking the Bhagavad Gita now. And I say, and all we want is your money. And immediately they'll go get their money. I guarantee, I promise you. It works every time. Ask me, cool. She comes door to door. We're together, we go door to door. They always give. You have to approach people properly. You have to know what their mentality is. This is the art of book distribution. It's just like a veterinarian, you know. If you approach a dog, he'll bite you on the hand. But a veterinarian knows, like, Poochie, it's okay, you know. And then the dog's like, okay, all right. He knows. There's a dog whisperer. He knows how to take care of a dog. So you have to learn this art, how to whisper to the soul. It's okay. I'm okay. That's why you have to do strong sadhana. You actually have to be okay. You actually have to be inspired in your heart, pure in heart. You actually have to feel compassion. If you feel compassion for people and you present a gift to them and you invite them to give something in return, they'll feel compelled to do it. This is not a mechanical thing. It's actually an exchange of love. This is a loving exchange by which the Krishna conscious movement was started. It's a voluntary movement. It can only be a voluntary movement. It's based on love and trust and the six loving exchanges. What else? Yes?
Raji, you mentioned that there are two sides of institutionalizing. One is soft and hard. Soft is books. So what is the algorithm?
Yeah, then you have to have the institution itself. You have to have management centers so people can... You have to have temples so people can come in. You have to have temples. People have to come in and get relief from the world. They have to have a place they can meet and see the deity, see the form of the Lord. They have to be able to get prasadam. They have to be able to join something. They have to have an association of devotees. This is very necessary. And along with that comes a lot of problems, doesn't it?
Yes.
Any temple residents in here? The leaders? Yeah. There's unlimited problems. But that's the austerity of the Goshtianandis. Vajinandis go off in the forest. They don't have any problems except keeping the bugs away so they can keep chanting. But we have unlimited problems. We take this austerity because you have to deal with people and they're really difficult to deal with. Everyone's got a different idea. So you also have to be able to accommodate all kinds of people, bring them together in one common mission to help people all over the world. That's what Goshtianandis do. They live amongst people and they organize themselves for the good of the world. And that's a great austerity, one that will take you back to Godhead. It's worth the while to hold together the institution. It's got to be done. And as Madhavananda Prabhu points out in his famous lecture at the Gambira, every year that we're there, at Jagannath Puri, Krishna always supports organized religion. With all its faults, he always supports it because it's got to be there for the masses of people to come in contact. What else? Yes?
If Krishna supports organized religion, why are there so many problems?
Because living entities are individual. And Prabhupada points this out in a letter to Maitreya Rishi. When Maitreya Rishi Prabhu, great soul as he was, and a GBC representative, was telling Prabhupada, there's so many problems because all these other GBC members are arguing with each other, vehemently arguing. Prabhupada wrote back and he said, that is because they're individuals, eternally. And he said, it's always like that. He said, even in the spiritual realm, it's like that. There's anomalies even there because of the fact that everyone's individual. They all have different opinions about everything. Every soul is different from another soul. There's not one that's the same as another. And therefore, that's what gives taste. It's interesting that there's this, all these differences. But he said to Atreya Rishi, don't expect utopia, even in the spiritual realm. And he went on to say, look it, in Vraj, Krishna sometimes milks a bull because he's so bewildered by seeing Radharani that he milks a bull. So there are going to be anomalies. Yes?
Prabhupada, when we go to distribute books and some people will show enthusiasm and take the Bhagavad Gita and it's almost like they're taking it, and then when we ask for donation, they give it back and say, oh, I don't have check, I don't have cash. How do you deal with it?
There's a whole system, and I can teach you that system. I can show you a system to sell a Bhagavad Gita, through which you can sell a Bhagavad Gita to anyone, at any time, anywhere. And I guarantee it, once you learn the system, that you'll be able to do it here. To anybody, anywhere, at any time. Guaranteed. At least 98 or 99.9% success rate. I guarantee. For your money back from this seminar. That's what people say, I don't have any money. That's not true. They all have money. Everybody has money. It's just a matter of if the confused mind, the conflicted mind always says no. Because it's an easier default position. So you just have to know how to accommodate people's giving so that they can give wholeheartedly. First of all, my principle is, for allowing people to give, is I don't put any expectation on them. I present the case and I let them voluntarily give. If they voluntarily give, they decide to give themselves, they know they voluntarily gave, and it's much more powerful. And they actually end up appreciating it more and they end up giving more as well. Because they feel inspired to give, because it's their idea. That's why I say we don't need the money. And I'll let them keep the book anyway. Even if they don't give, as long as they respect it, as long as they're not averse to it, I'm not going to put it in a bad home somewhere. Those people don't want to keep it anyway. But if somebody has the book, they want to keep it, I tell them, look, you already paid attention. That's enough. That's paying something. Money's just a token. It's just a way of expressing yourself when you give out money to say, oh yeah, I believe in this. In fact, I took an economics course when I was in school. And in economics, first thing the teacher taught us was
time is money.
Time is money, but she said something even more precise, which is that money is called dollar votes. You vote with your money. How many dollar votes do you have today? Well, this is my vote right now. I give you a dollar. I give you $10. Here's $1,000. You just voted like that. So anyway, people oftentimes say, I don't have any money. It's not true. So the one thing that you can do is employ the penny principle. And you'll read about it in my book, Our Family Business. What is the penny principle? Well, I coined that phrase one day when we were on a marathon. Bhakti Kumar was going door to door. I told everyone, all these Gitas have to go. Everyone's got to get a Gita. Just get whatever you can from people. Even if they give a penny, they get a Gita, something, whatever. So he was door to door, and this man was saying, okay, Gita, all right, but you know, it's like, I don't have any money. He said, just give a penny. He said, you're going to take a penny for this book? Okay, I'll give you a penny. So he runs to the back of his apartment. Bhakti Kumar could hear him back there rummaging around. His wife comes in and said, what are you doing? He said, I'm looking for a penny. Why are you looking for a penny? So there's this guy out there he's got this book, he gave me this book, and he wants a donation. She said, well, why are you giving him a penny? Let me see that book. She starts going through, this is a great book. She marched him out there and made him give $50. So that's the concept of the penny principle was born. It wasn't born there, it's just I coined the phrase. But the fact is, Prabhupada talks about this. He says, sannyasi is going door to door in the neighborhood. He knocks on one door, householders are having a fight inside, so they're in a bad mood. So when he opens the door, he asks for alms for the temple. And the wife is angry, tells her husband, give him some ashes, tell him to go away. So the husband, he's in a foul mood, he takes some ashes from the stove, throws it in the begging bowl, and says, now go out, get away. So this very intelligent, compassionate sannyasi takes the ashes back to the temple, carefully wraps them in a cloth, and he gives them to Pujari and says, use these to polish the brass for the deity. So every day he's polishing the brass with this. And then 3 months later, Prabhupada tells, the sannyasi goes to the same neighborhood. He forgets which house is which, so he knocks on the same door. And the householder couple comes out, dandavats, they fall on the ground. And their hearts became purified. And Prabhupada then says, from one pinch of ashes, back home, back to God. So, oftentimes people say, I don't have any money. And they say, I don't have any money. They say, great, we don't take any money. We take MasterCard, Visa, American Express, MasterCard, which is true. You've got to take credit cards. And they go, okay, I'll give a credit card. Or they say, no, I really don't have any money. And I say, okay, no problem. Just keep the book and give a penny. And they go, penny? Yeah. And then they'll like go through and they go, here's 10, here's 20, $20, whatever. They ask for a penny because what they're really saying is, I don't know how much to give. And another way you can overcome that is you can tell them how much it is. You can say, look, with shipping and printing and storage, these cost about $10. Anything you give over 10 is a donation. And then there's various ways around that. It's not true people don't have money. And it's just a matter of learning the art of how to introduce these books to people in a way that they can accept them. A couple more? Yes.
I just wanted to tell you that once we were at Harinama Beaver Street, which is like close to this, so one person was telling me about Bhagavad Gita, the soft form, the non-human American body. He took the book and said, I don't have anything. So, but then we couldn't do anything, so he took the book. After a few minutes, he came back and gave us two gingers. And so, I mean, at that case, like, we asked for donations, everything. The donation box was there a little bit. But he came and dropped two gingers in the donation box, but took the book. So, I mean, how do you handle this situation, Prabhu? One question, and the second question is for...
Wait, can I do one at a time?
I just want to finish it up. Okay. I don't need to take books at the same time. Because we have found some men, non-Indians, when not to Georgia, very interested. With the book, very interested, like really, they really want to take the book. But when they ask for donations, they do a little hesitated, or doesn't take it, or say, probably you can give it to somebody who really needs it. We tell them that you are the person who needs it more, you just said. But then, very interested, but doesn't have anything to
give. You got the wrong mantra. You just gotta get the right mantra, that's all. The world runs by mantra, you get the right mantra. You get the mantras. Where do you get mantras? You get them from somebody. Just like you get the holy name. You go to a guru and the guru gives you the mantra. Then you chant the mantra, then you get the result. So in book distribution, if you get mantras from somebody, it's already working. We got 29 people out of 30 yesterday. Our mantras work. We guarantee our mantras or your money back. If you use my mantra, it's not my mantra. This mantra came from different devotees and from realizations and everything. If you use this mantra, everyone will give a donation, I promise you. Okay, and what was the first question? See, I forgot.
What to do with the ginger?
Ginger, yes. Well, it was kind of a question, like, what do you do about... And so, one day, we were going door to door. So this young Muslim kid, who was very enthusiastic about the Quran, came out on his porch and started talking to us. And he was very open to reading the Bhagavad Gita, and I asked him for a donation. He gave me 4 cans of orange soda, a book about the Quran, and the Quran itself. And that's all he cared to give. That's what he wanted to give. I accepted it. It was from his heart. 4 cans of orange soda. The devotees took that. I kept the book about the Koran and the Koran in my bag. Hour later, I was walking through the parking lot of the same apartment building. I saw a man approaching. I said, "Oh, hi, I'm from Burlingame. Are you from this area?" He said, "Yes, I am." I said, "Great, here, I'll show you one of these." I showed him Bhagavad Gita. He said, "No, thanks, I'm a Muslim." He said, "No problem, here, here's a Koran." And he said, "I'm a Muslim, I got a Koran." I said, "Yeah, but you don't have this. It's a book about the Koran." And he took that, and he gave me $8. So, you have to be inventive. You have to accept what people offer you, because, you know, they give from their heart. You could take a grape, you could take a banana, or you could just, if you took their valuable time. I write about this in the book. I met this Christian couple in Honolulu. Hawaii. A lot of honeymoon couples there. That I've been at the temple with my good friend, hearing and chanting for the week. We go out on Sankirtan for a few hours in the evening, and beautiful Hawaii weather. We were feeling ecstasy. I showed them the Bhagavatam, first canto. Christian couple, they said, "No thanks, for Christians." And they said, "Plus, we don't give to anything but our own church." So full of happiness in my heart for having the association with devotees, I just took it back with no friction at all, and I said, "I just want to tell you what an honor it was to meet you. And no problem at all not taking the book or giving it to me. I completely understand." They walked away, and half an hour later, I was standing there talking to somebody else. The same couple came back. And they said, "We changed our mind. We want to give a donation." They felt something. And if you treat people with utter respect, if you leave everyone with a good impression, then they'll feel something in their heart from you. There'll be a loving exchange that takes place. And maybe it's not this time. It has an effect on the world. So one thing is, there's a TikTok. There's time going by now. So what time is it?
8:10.
8:10. It's a weekday too. So what would you like to do now? And what is the program? Because there's a couple things. I mean, I know I took a lot of time already, but there is a way in which I could show you this mantra, how to sell a Bhagavad Gita on its own merit.
Yes.
And you can try it right in this room.
Yes.
It'll be riotous when you do this. But what will happen is you'll feel empowered when you learn this sequence of mantras I'm going to teach you. Do you want to learn it real quick?
Yes.
Is it okay?
Yes.
Okay, could you put me on the other... Oh, actually, I'll do it, because I know where it is. All right, on the laptop, I'm just going to go through the steps really quickly. There's a few steps, and when you learn the steps, you'll be able to sell Bhagavad Gita as it is to any non-Indian, anywhere at any time. For Indians, do the other system that I taught. You remember what it was? Don't give them anything. Just tell them what you're doing. Okay. Everyone okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Here it is. Okay. All right. If you can plug it back in, do you know what? What?
It's on here.
Oh. That's amazing. Okay. All right. Okay, so Prabhupada said that if you just sell these books on their own merit, you'll be successful. Because everything that you need is to tell them is already in and on the book. So here are the steps. First is radar. Repeat, radar.
Radar.
Qualify.
Qualify.
Trust the hand.
Trust the hand.
Give a nutshell presentation.
Give a nutshell presentation.
Show and tell.
Show and tell.
Compliment.
Compliment.
Use humor.
Use humor.
Engage.
Engage.
Okay, so you didn't know this, perhaps, but you have radar. Because you're a conscious living entity. Actually, you have a lot more power than you think. And book distribution is a conscious exchange with other living entities. So I'm going to teach you where your radar comes from. Hold up your right hand, point it at somebody, not at me. You can't absorb it all. Really point it at somebody deliberately. And I'm going to give you the mantra to activate your radar. Not as you put up your hand, right hand, like this. Point it at somebody and look at them. Okay, ready for the mantra? Hi. Now watch. Okay, he's laughing. What else do you see, whoever you shot with your radar? What do you see?
Laughing.
Laughing, smiling? That's because you're all devotees. So when you shoot somebody else with your radar, what other reactions might you get? Somebody might frown, somebody might ignore you. So this is a reading. It's nothing else but a reading. So this person, this is his job. He's supposed to keep the law in order. He shoots his radar gun out, it hits the car, he gets a reading. He reacts according to the reading. If the car is going slow, he just lets it go. If the car is going above the speed limit, then he has to do something about it, right? So you do the same thing. If a person gives a positive reading, then you can do something about it. If a person doesn't give a positive reading, you're not obligated to do anything. You're off the hook, okay? So, next stage is, after using your hand power, you have a lot of power in your hand, use it, activate it through the mantra, is to qualify. Because if you just walk up to people and hand them a book out of the blue, they'll wonder why you're doing it, and they'll doubt whether they should be doing it. So first, before you hand the book over, you qualify them. How do you qualify? By asking a question. And I'm going to bring this point up in, a couple of times during this very short presentation, and that is that the most important punctuation mark in any language is
question.
A question mark. Because question mark is a hook, and it's also a tennis racket. It acts in various ways. It's a very important tool. Become a master asker. Become a what?
Master asker.
Become a master asker. Don't tell people, ask them. And lead them to the right conclusion. Here's a good way to qualify people. I'm from California. Where are you from?
India.
I love India. Fantastic. Here, I'll show you too. Books on yoga and meditation shows how to get free from stress. So I don't ask them a yes or no question, because a yes or no question will get a no answer. And then you finish, you might as well pack it in for the day. So if you want to ask a question that can answer but in a very specific way. So I'm from California. Where are you from?
Hillsborough.
Where?
Hillsborough.
I love Hillsborough. Fantastic. Here, I'll show you one too. I'm from California. Where are you from?
North Carolina.
Okay, North Carolina. Now, what's your name? Dhruv. When I ask you where you're from, say Timbuktu. Okay. I'm from California. Where are you from?
Timbuktu.
He's from Timbuktu. Fantastic. I love Timbuktu. Whatever, wherever they're from, we love that place. And we're able to show them the book. We'll take questions after.
Once again, Prabhu, what if they say, I'm not interested?
Well, then that's fine. And see, that's part of the process. We're not chasing people. We're not trying to convince people. We're picking ripe fruits. When you go out in the orchard to pick your fruits, what kind of fruits are you picking?
Right.
Yeah, what variety of fruit?
Apples.
Apples. Okay, how do you know it's a ripe apple? Okay, red. Sometimes they're green. But they're sweet. They have a certain quality to them. Good apple pickers know. Comes off easily in your hand too, right?
Right.
What if it's still on the vine and it sticks to the vine? It's not ripe yet. What you do is you grab it and you pull it as hard as you can. And if it doesn't come off, you break the branch off, right? And you drag it down the street. Is that correct?
No.
Is it correct?
No.
Say no, Vaisheshi Vidas. It is not correct. Okay. So when you're dealing with living entities also, you're looking for the ripe fruits, not the unripe fruits. So next stage is to trust the hand. You qualify them. Whatever they tell you they're from, they're qualified. Okay. And, I mean, they say they're not interested. Perfect. We're looking for people not interested. We'll show you one too. So you'll notice in this picture, look at the woman's hand as a reciprocal. See the hand? It's like this, a classic hand move. So the mind does all kinds of things. The mind accepts and rejects, but the hand doesn't care. The hand goes like, the mind's going, don't do it, don't do it, don't. The hand goes, no, I'll do it. It just reaches out and take it. So put the hand, the book out like this, and make sure you feel confident. Hand the book over. Be ready to let these books go out into the world. Put it in people's hands. And you see how it is? Watch. Hands are coming from every direction. So trust the hand. Put the book in their hand. Let them have a visceral experience of the hand. As I'm handing the book over, I give them this mantra. There are many mantras. I use many mantras. But for the sake of training, this is one very powerful mantra you can use. Anyway. Repeat after me. Books on yoga and meditation.
Books on yoga and meditation.
They show you how to get free from stress.
They show you how to get free from stress.
Books on yoga and meditation.
Books on yoga and
meditation. They show you how to get free from stress.
They show you how to get free from stress.
Books on yoga and meditation.
They
show you how to get free from stress.
Books on yoga and meditation that frees you from stress.
That shows you how to get free from stress.
Books on yoga and meditation
that show you how to get free from stress.
Books on yoga and meditation that shows you how to get free from stress.
Yeah, practice this in front of a mirror until you got it down. If I wake you up at 1 o'clock in the morning, say, what is it? You know, books on yoga and meditation. So this is an important mantra because it's telling them what's in it for them. And as I'm handing the book over, you'll notice there's an arc. Here, watch the arc. Books on yoga and meditation shows how to get free from stress. As soon as it hits his hand, I'm saying stress, right? Now, it's in his possession. I just gave him the book. Now, I need a question, because a question is a hook. It holds everything together. Now, what do I ask him? You've heard of stress before, right?
Yes.
Yes. Really, because you don't look stressed. You look very peaceful to me. Now, what happens if you walk out of your house in the morning and you see your neighbor, and your neighbor goes, wow, you look terrible today. How do you feel? Okay, what if you run into one of your devotee friends, and you see they go, you look tired. How do you feel? Somebody looks at you and goes like, oh, you look fantastic today. How do you feel?
Wow.
I feel great. Okay, so when we meet people and we ask them, you've heard of stress, right? And they say, that's the question we ask them. So if you're heard of stress, you've heard of stress before, right? Ask that question. Here's a musician. Let him come up here. Musicians know how to fix these things. There you go. Shows how to get free from stress. And now I ask the question, you've heard of stress.
Yes.
What do people say?
Yes.
What if they say no? No problem. They say yes or no, it's okay. Because the next part of it is, you heard stress before, right? Say yes?
Yes.
Oh, really, because you don't look stressed. You look very peaceful. In fact, you look spiritual. Now, if you say to somebody, you look spiritual, how do they feel? They suddenly orient themselves to being spiritual. It's amazing, actually, because they are spiritual. And if you say, you look spiritual, people start feeling, wow, I look spiritual. They start thinking about themselves as spiritual. And they do look spiritual. If you look them in the eye, because they're parts and parcel of Krishna. You look spiritual. And so, you've heard of stress before, right? And you say, no, I'm not stressed at all.
No, I'm not stressed.
I know, I can tell by looking at you. You don't look stressed at all. In fact, you look spiritual. So either way, it's okay, right? So you look spiritual. Now here comes the big, big, big question. Take this one with you. You can use it even in isolation, and it'll have great power. What's your secret? Everyone say.
What's your secret?
May I ask this? It changes the relationship that you have with the person. What we are doing is interrupting their life. We're condescending to give them some knowledge that they don't have. They feel, perhaps, on a very subtle level, they may feel put upon, even the nicest of people, that here you are, you're approaching me, you're teaching me something, you're trying to change me, and now you reverse the roles. That person becomes your mentor, your guru, and you take the humble role. What's your secret? How do you do that? How do you look so spiritual? How do you do that?
Amazing prashadam.
Okay, amazing prashadam. I can tell by looking at you. That's amazing. Fantastic. And so, whatever they tell you, now people tell you different things. What else are they going to say? What's your secret?
I do yoga.
I do yoga. That's the mode of goodness then?
Marijuana.
Get down with the mode of passion.
I sleep a lot.
Yes. Or the ignorance. Or I smoke marijuana. People say all these things. You say, you just, I can tell. Fantastic. I knew you were into this. And then I take the book back. That's when I take it back and I start to show them. I say, I've acknowledged that they already know about this because they're spiritual. And now I say, I'm going to show you really, here, I'll show you really quick. How fast am I going to show them?
Really
quick. Because their mind's still going, how long is this going to take? My mom's calling me, I've got to go make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So, you take the book and you just show what's in and on the book. Because in sales, oftentimes people give you a little flip book to sell the item, right? And you just flip through and at the end people buy it because it's a perfect presentation. Well, everything you need to sell this book is in or on the book. It's not only the product, but it's also the flip book. It's all in one. So, I'm going to show you really quick. Look at this. Thoreau, Emerson, Mahatma Gandhi, add a few more, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Albert Einstein, the Beatles, Tupac Shakur. They all read this book. It's back. Now, open it to Sanskrit. Can you read that?
No.
I was just testing you. It's translated in English, but this has been translated many times from Sanskrit into English, and out of all the different translations, this has become very popular academically. You've heard of USC?
Yes.
Georgetown University?
Of course.
Yes. And here it is in a nutshell. We're all just passing through. We start here, we end up here. Where are you in all this? Right here, I'm over here, I was here 5 minutes ago. Okay? A self-realized person treats everyone with respect because he or she sees the spirit is it within everyone's heart. You've heard of karma, right?
Yes.
What does it mean to you?
You do good to others and something good will happen to you.
Whoa. I really like how you put things. If more people in the world thought like you, it would be a better world to live in. What do you do professionally? Look at this guy used to be a doctor. We don't sell this like in a bookstore. We only ask for a donation. We don't need the money. It's an ancient tradition. When you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it connects you to the previous teachers who have passed it down over many generations and allows you to enter deeply within the knowledge. It costs us about 10 to print and ship and store. Anything you give over that is a donation. We try to keep it under 100, but in your case, we're thinking about making an exception. Let the record show he gave his whole wall. Okay. Give him a hand. You did too. Okay, so this what's your secret is a very powerful question to ask. Take the book back. Here, I'll show you. How fast?
Really quick.
How fast?
Really quick.
Yes, really quick. In fact, there was a guy at the corner. He had a big drink in his hand, biggest drink I've ever seen. And some other kind of sandwich or something like that. He's going just ready to cross into the parking lot. And I approached him, I'm California, where are you from? And he said, I don't have time. I said, here's a question. Question is a hook. Would you like to show me to show you really quick? And he goes, I don't know. And I asked all the devotees who are standing there. I said, is it okay if I show him really quick? And they go, yes, it's okay. You show him. They said, it's okay if I show you really quick. And he goes, okay, I'll take a look. And I just showed him a small book. I took the drink in my hand, everything, and then gave a donation and walked away with the book. So it just takes a few seconds, but ask the questions and show them really quick. Okay, On the back, Thoreau, Emerson, Gandhi, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Albert Einstein, the Beatles, don't forget Tupac Shakur. I just kind of read the Bhagavad Gita. He read the Bhagavad Gita. He's morta. Tupac? You can Google it later. He was a very famous African-American music artist. Thank you. So then we come to the Sanskrit I told you about. Ask them if they can read this. Tell them that we're just testing them. It's actually translated in English. And out of all English translations, this has become very popular academically. You're just dropping names. USC, Georgetown University. It's in the front of the book. Learn where it is. Then you turn to the changing bodies. We start here. We end up here. We're just passing through. Get them involved and ask them, where are you in all this? And then we go to the next page. This shows a self-realized person. That's not the picture. This is not updated yet. This shows a self-realized person. Treats everyone with respect because he or she sees God's within everyone's heart. And then you've heard of karma, right? Have you all heard of karma?
Yes.
What does it mean to you? Whoa, I really like how you put things. If more people in the world thought like you, it'd be a better world to live in. So, ask me what karma means. Well, you know, there's rabbits and there's mosquitoes. And all kinds of crazy stuff happens.
Whoa!
I really like the way you put things. More people in the world thought like you, it'd be better world to live in. Wasn't it us that was together when we were on the street, we were going down the street, and there was this group of young girls, I think they were going to attend their friend's wedding. So I showed them Bhagavad Gita. There was about 15 devotees. We were walking down. I showed her the Bhagavad Gita, got to this part about karma. It says, what does karma mean to you? And he goes, it doesn't mean anything to me, I'm a Christian. I don't believe in it. I said, yeah, but if you were going to say something about karma, what would you say? I don't know, it's some concept of you do good things, you get good things. And all the devotees went, whoa! I really like the way you put things, the whole group. And she took the book. So this is the part where you add some energy into your presentation, where you really appreciate it. You've got to really lean back into it and give them some presentation. And then, humor. What do you do professionally?
I'm a carpenter.
Okay. What do you do professionally?
I drive a truck.
See, there's a lot of things. I just say a civil engineer, truck driver, I'm a school teacher, I'm a dancer. And then your answer is, really, this guy used to be a civil engineer. Really, this guy used to be a Sunday school teacher. Really, this guy used to be a dancer. Dancer, truck driver, and if they say teacher, like, what kind of teacher are you? And it's like, oh, I teach kids third grade. This guy used to be a third grade teacher. So once they're laughing and they say ha ha ha, 50% of the time they say ha ha, the other 50% they go, really? And they go, no, not really. And then they go, ha ha ha. And then they go, ha ha ha. That's when you give the book back. And you say, we don't sell it. And that's what I'm saying as I'm handing the book back. Because they might be thinking, like, okay, now here comes the close. And so here it is. We don't sell it, like in a bookstore. We only ask for donation.
We don't need the money.
The only reason we ask.
When
you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it connects you to the previous teachers.
So it
passed it down over many generations. And allows you to enter deeply within the knowledge. We try to keep it under 100. But in your case, we're thinking about making an exception. Sometimes people say, I don't have any money. I said, sorry, just give whatever you can. Give whatever you can, okay. And they start going and say, I give you change if you just have 100, so I can break one for you. And the little humor at that point is very relieving to them. Okay, so we don't sell like a bookstore. We don't need the money. It's an ancient tradition. And then there's different comebacks that I can show you later. But the next stage is after they give a donation, then we say, do you believe in the power of prayer? And so they say what?
Yes.
No.
What if they say no?
No.
Say, perfect. I'll give you a mantra. So then we hand them card and say, this is a beautiful prayer from Sanskrit. They're names of gods that meant to wake up love for God in your heart. I'm going to say it once in each repeat. Are you ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama Rama.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Who was out with us yesterday? Did we get people to chant the Maha Mantra afterwards?
Yeah, we did.
Yes. Yeah. All the people, they buy a book, they take Maha Mantra, and then we give them prasadam. So you hand over a lollipop, and then if they're very favorable, you take their name and you put them into your system so that you can follow up with them later. And then you take time at the end to thank them for taking their valuable time. Leave everyone with a good impression. And even if they don't take a book, leave them with a good impression at the end. You recognize, right? We just happened to knock on that door.
Radha.
Yeah. That was a good door to start with. So these are the stages, and I'll put them on the board. And what we're going to do, if we still have permission, is to stand up in a second. You have Gitas, right? And we'll form a couple of rows, two rows of two, facing each other. Each person has a partner. On one side, you're holding a book. Same row, everyone holding book. And the other side, nothing in your hands. Okay? And then you go through these stages. And so let's see if you can get organized and stand up in two rows.
Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Hey! Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman.